Right. Okay. Let's get into this. We're doing a deep dive today.
Yeah, into something pretty complex and, well, pretty important for creators.
Exactly. Complex and honestly really frustrating sometimes. This whole world of YouTube's content ID system and how it's, maybe being exploited. We're using that big recent drama as our way in, right? The thing with Rick Beato and UMG, Universal Music Group.
Yeah, that's a perfect lens for this.
Because if you're out there, making videos, commentary, education, reactions, whatever, this isn't just some abstract issue. It feels like a systemic threat almost.
It really can be. These major labels, they're filing just huge numbers of copyright
Right,
claims.
like flooding the system.
Yeah.
And the goal seems pretty clear. Grab the monetization from videos.
That's the core of it. So our mission really is to understand how this works, the strategy behind it all.
And figure out what loopholes are being used.
Exactly. And most importantly, talk about the defense, how creators can actually use fair use, the legal concept, to fight back effectively.
It's fascinating, isn't it? How just the sheer scale changes everything.
Oh, absolutely. The sources we looked at basically call it weaponizing the copyright system, using the existing rules, but at a massive volume to just pull in revenue.
Low effort, high reward for them, maybe.
Kind of, yeah. Because the key thing is, creators like Beato doing educational stuff, commentary, they often are legally entitled to keep that revenue under fair use.
But the labels are banking on them not fighting every single claim.
Precisely. It stops being about winning one specific legal argument and becomes about collecting, billions of tiny payments that nobody contests because it's too much hassle.
And for Rick Beato, this definitely went past just being hassle. He literally called his follow-up video, and that was personal.
Yeah, you can see why. The volume itself is just relentless.
He said he was getting, what was it, ridiculous amounts of claims all the time.
Something like 25 new claims in just one day, hitting old videos, new stuff, even shorts.
Wow. So they're really digging back through the archives.
Seems like it. Just scrubbing through, looking for anything they can flag. It's systematic.
And that makes sense of something else we saw Beato admitted, like probably loads of creators. He often just didn't fight claims in the past.
Right. Why would you? It takes time, energy. Maybe the money on one video isn't huge.
So that's the bully tactic right there.
That is the entire strategy laid bare, file the claim, grab the monetization, and just rely on creators being too busy or maybe too intimidated to fight.
Because if you don't fight,
Then the label gets the cash, and crucially, it never gets to that next stage, that scary step two.
the DMCA counter notification process,
Yeah.
the one that feels like it puts your channel at risk.
Exactly. So they use that low-level threat, that potential escalation, just to keep the money flowing in without any real challenge.
But then with Beato, it went even further. It wasn't just the volume, it was that specific refiled claim.
Ah, yes. That was pretty blatant.
He got a new claim for the exact same song that Sergio Mendes' track, Never Gonna Let You Go.
Which he had already fought and won back in 2021.
Right. He disputed it. UMG didn't respond in the 30 days.
So, under YouTube's rules, the claim was released automatically. Case closed, supposedly.
So for that same claim to pop up again years later, it feels like they're just ignoring the previous outcome, trying their luck again.
It certainly suggests a disregard for the system's own resolution process, which, brings us to the next bit of chaos.
Yeah, the gap between YouTube's policy, the automated stuff, and what these companies are actually doing, maybe manually.
Okay, so the Content ID system, YouTube system, it's meant to give a clear result, right? You dispute, claimant gets 30 days, they miss the deadline, claim release.
And the policy generally says they can't then use Content ID for the same thing on the same video again. The system sees it as resolved.
Correct. That expiration is supposed to be the final word for that specific Content ID claim.
Okay, so how are they getting around that? If the automated system blocks it, how is UMG or anyone managing to refile essentially the same claim?
This is where you got to understand the difference between Content ID, the automated system, and a manual claim, which is often tied to a DMCA takedown notice.
Ah, okay. One's platform policy, the other's more. Direct legal action.
Pretty much. Content ID is YouTube's internal process. A manual claim is the copyright owner directly saying, "Nope, we believe this is infringement," outside of just the algorithm.
So they're using the manual process to kind of sidestep the Content ID history.
It looks like it. While Content ID might be blocked from automatically reclaiming, the copyright owner still retains the right to file a manual takedown if they genuinely believe infringement is happening. It's a different path.
So Content ID for the high volume initial sweep.
Get as much as you can automatically.
And then maybe use manual claims for tricky ones or ones they lost procedurally before, or maybe just valuable videos.
Exactly. They're scrubbing through, like you said, using the cheap automated tool first, then bringing in humans for the manual claims where needed.
And the sources pointed out, you add up all those claims across thousands of videos.
It adds up. The sources basically said, bet that's some pretty good ad revenue, especially considering the labels didn't create the commentary or the educational part around the music.
Which just hammers home why creators need to know the actual law, not just YouTube's interface. If you want to defend this, you need fair use. 17 U.S.C. Section 107. Where do we start?
Right. Section 107, that's the legal foundation. It's judge-made law, basically recognizing that society benefits when copyrighted stuff can be used without permission for certain things.
Like criticism, commentary.
Teaching, research, news reporting,
things
like that. It gives us four factors to weigh up. And Beato's videos are actually a great way to illustrate them.
Okay. Factor one, purpose and character of the use. I hear the word transformative a lot here. What's that mean?
Transformative is key, it asks. Are you using the original work for a different purpose? Adding something new, giving it a new meaning or message?
So Beato takes music,
which exists to be listened to, enjoyed, bought.
Mm.
And he uses snippets for commentary, for education. He's analyzing it, critiquing it, teaching about it.
That's a different purpose than just listening.
Exactly. He's transforming its purpose from entertainment to education or criticism. Even though his channel is commercial, earns revenue, this transformative use weighs heavily for fair use.
Okay. A factor two, the nature of the copyrighted work.
This one considers what kind of work is being used. Music, art, fiction, they're highly creative and expressive.
So they get more copyright protection.
Generally, yes. More than, say, a factual database or a technical manual. So using music, which is very creative, might weigh slightly against fair use. But honestly, this factor alone rarely decides a case.
Got it. Factor three feels like a big one online. The amount and substantiality of the portion used.
Oh, it's critical, especially for music and video. Fair use basically says you should only use as much of the original work as is necessary to make your point.
And Beato seems pretty good at this. Playing short clips.
Textbook example. He wants to talk about a specific guitar riff or a bass line. He plays maybe 5-10 seconds, just the hook or the relevant part, and stops and talks about it. He's not just letting the whole song play.
Yeah, I saw a contrast mentioned of he was just like dancing around to the whole song with no comment.
That wouldn't fly. That's excessive. Using the whole thing or a substantial part without a clear need for it really hurts a fair use argument. Beato's surgical approach, short clip, specific commentary is exactly what this factor looks for. Minimal use for the purpose.
Makes sense. Okay, last one. Factor four. The effect of the use upon the potential market for or value of the copyrighted work.
Right. Does your use harm the original creator's ability to make money from their work? Does it act as a substitute for the original?
With Beato, you could argue his videos actually help the original artists. Like free promotion.
That's often the argument for commentary and review. It generates interest, leads people to seek out the original song. It's not replacing the market for the song. If anything, it might enhance it.
So it's not like he's taking the song and selling it as, I don't know, background music for something else.
Exactly. Or like those AI music lawsuits we hear about, where companies allegedly train AI on copyrighted songs to create competing songs that sound similar. That kind of use directly harms the market for the original. Beato's analysis doesn't.
Okay, so understanding those four factors gives you the legal basis to fight back in that initial dispute, stage one.
It gives you the arguments, yes.
But then there's stage two, the escalation, that DMCA counter notification, which, you know, we call terrifying.
And it is, genuinely. Because when you file that counter notification, you are doing it under penalty of perjury.
Meaning you're swearing it's true.
You're signing a legal document, effectively, stating you have a good faith belief the material was claimed by mistake or misidentification, basically, asserting your fair use right. If they could prove you knowingly lied on that form.
That's serious, not just a channel strike.
Could be serious civil penalties, potentially even criminal, though that's rare. But the risk feels very real to creators.
And hearing about Beato specifically, you know, 63 years old, recently had major heart surgery, just wants to make my videos about music. It really grounds the whole thing. And this isn't just corporations fighting. It's individuals dealing with this pressure.
It absolutely humanizes it. And it explains his calculation. He explicitly said he's not going to launch some massive lawsuit himself, a class action or harassment suit, too much personal cost.
But he is fighting the individual claims now.
Yes. And he said why? To raise awareness. To fight for, in his words, the other creators on this platform that don't have the viewership or the money that he has to withstand this kind of thing. He's using his platform to demonstrate the fight.
Which leads right into that final strategic point, the game of chicken.
That's what it boiled down to. Once a creator files that counter notification citing fair use under Section 107, the ball is back in the claimant's court.
The record label.
Right. To keep the claim active or enforce a takedown after a counter notice, the label has only one option. File a lawsuit against the creator in actual court.
And that costs real money. Lawyers, court fees.
A lot of money. So the label has to ask, is it worth spending, say, $50,000 or more on legal fees to potentially recover maybe a few hundred dollars in ad revenue from this one video?
Probably not, in most cases.
Usually the math doesn't work out for them. That's why many creators who understand this are now, well, kind of calling the bluff. They file the counter notice and basically dare the label to sue, knowing it's unlikely.
So it's a bet. The label bets the creator won't risk the counter notice. The creator bets the label won't risk the lawsuit.
Exactly. It's a high-stakes game of chicken. But the law, specifically fair use, gives the creator a strong position if their use is legitimate.
So summing up the core issue, this whole battle over monetization, it really hinges on volume and hoping creators just get tired or scared.
Yeah, banking on fatigue and fear.
But knowing the difference between just YouTube's platform rules and the actual copyright law, specifically fair use, Section 107, that's the shield, that's the defense.
Yeah, it's the essential knowledge. The volume of claims is how they exploit the system, but the legal substance of fair use is how you defend against it, if your use qualifies.
But we should also touch on the worst case scenario, right?
Yeah.
The ultimate threat.
We have to. The sources mention the sort of straw that breaks the camel's back idea. Repeated claims, especially manual ones, could lead to channel strikes, enough strikes.
And the channel gets deleted, years of work, just gone.
It's the nuclear option. And while Beto chose the path of fighting individual claims for awareness, this whole situation shows how weaponizing content ID isn't just about revenue. It can genuinely threaten the existence of these channels.
Especially educational and commentary channels, which rely on using copyrighted material to, you know, do their work.
Precisely.
Okay, so let's leave everyone with something to think about. A final thought here. If these big record labels do succeed in making this high-volume, low-effort claiming process a standard, low-risk way to generate revenue, basically collecting money from creators just because those creators are afraid to fight back, what's the real long-term cost? It's not just about ad dollars, is it? What does it mean for the future of actual criticism or education online or just the sheer variety of voices that build upon existing culture, existing copyrighted works?
Yeah, that's the fundamental question, isn't it? Does the principle of fair use, the ability to comment and critique, actually survive in practice if the system makes it too risky or too exhausting to exercise that right? A chilling thought.